Everyone's still talking about it, and you heard a bit of it at the top of the program, that cracking sermon delivered at the wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle by the head of the Episcopal Church in the United States, Michael Curry. Bishop Curry is an African-American preacher with family roots in the civil rights movement. His style isn't typical of that of a royal chapel. But was there also a political motive behind the choice of Bishop Curry as wedding preacher? Professor Linda Woodhead of Lancaster University is co-author of That Was the Church That Was, How the Church of England Lost the English People.
We are told that it was the choice of the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, to ask Michael Curry, the head of the Episcopalian Church in the USA, to come and preach. Presumably that was because Meghan is from the USA and Meghan is biracial, so that was seen to be a very appropriate choice. But there's an interesting subtext to that, Andrew, because Michael Curry has just been rapped over the knuckles by the Archbishop of Canterbury and his council because his church is allowing gay marriage and they are writing a liturgy for gay marriage. So a couple of weeks back, he got a poison pen letter from the Archbishop and then he was the person invited to preach.
You're very good at discerning the rhythms and the politics of the Church of England. Was this a way for Justin Welby to also say, yes, we think you've erred on this question of a liturgy for same-sex marriage, but you're still part of the Anglican family?
I think it was. Justin Welby, like all archbishops, is very, very keen to try and hold the Anglican communion together and maintain unity. It's rapidly splitting apart. In many ways, it has already split apart. But there is this great, in a way, pretense that it's all one happy family and that we might be very angry with you one moment, but actually you're all part of the same family. So I think it did serve that purpose.
The sermon itself was not partisan, but did you detect any hints of politics in the sermon in the broadest sense?
I'm not sure. I think he was quite careful not to make it political. The central message was about the importance of love, and he did extend that to the whole political realm. He made it seem as if it wasn't just a personal matter about a marriage. It was about how the whole world should conduct itself. And he quoted Teilhard de Chardin, the famous Jesuit French theologian, who thought that a new era of love and peace would overtake the whole world. So I think there was that very utopian or eschatological hope for a transformed world. But I think he tried to keep party politics out of it as much as possible.
Well, he did indeed do that, Linda. But, for example, he said, when love is the way, no child will go to bed hungry in this world ever again. And he also beseeched business and commerce, institutions that don't exactly have the best reputation at the moment, to make love the centre of their activity. So there was a bit of at least subtle politics going on here.
Yes, if you were going to stick a label on it, you'd say it was more left-wing than right-wing, wouldn't you? But love is such a broad concept, Andrew, that really there wasn't very much that anyone could object to. But it's not terribly meaningful when you apply it. What does it mean in detail to commerce and politics? So I don't think anyone would have felt particularly got at in that.
Mm. There was also a subtle reference to the earth as a sanctuary. In the context of the current debates about immigration and refugees, can we sense anything there?
You're thinking he's making an anti-Brexit statement, aren't you?
Not quite. But I think if we look, though, at Michael Curry's previous very political statements in Donald Trump's America, I just wonder if there was a little bit of that bleeding into this. I mean, the guy had an audience of tens of millions.
Yes. I thought it was very significant that he started off by invoking Martin Luther King. So he set up his genealogy and his authority right from the start. The fact that he chose to cite one theologian, and it was Teilhard, who does have this very, very idealistic vision about a new era in the world now, I suppose a bit like Isaiah, there is peace and the lion lies down with the lamb. And I think he was presenting that vision.
I notice he also used that biblical phrase so common to the civil rights movement, then justice will roll down like a mighty stream.
Yes, he did. So I think the civil rights movement was absolutely more than the subtext of it, wasn't it?
Mm. Given the growth, or where the growth in the Church of England is occurring, it seems to be in parishes with strong African or Afro-Caribbean backgrounds. Are we likely to see more Michael Curry-style preaching throughout the Church of England?
You're right that some of the largest and fastest growing churches in Britain are Afro-Caribbean and African heritage ones, led by people who are first or second generation migrants to the UK. But they're not Anglican. They're not part of the Church of England. The Church of England hasn't really benefited from that. Those are independent churches. That style of preaching is not going to work in most Church of England churches. As you know, we're a famously uptight people. We don't like to be too enthusiastic.
It's one of the things I love about being in England.
We like understatement. Perhaps I'm talking about my generation. Perhaps younger people are less inhibited. It's a style that if it was preached in your average village in England would not go down very well. And it had very mixed reactions, even at the royal wedding.
Yeah. What were some of those mixed reactions?
Some people absolutely loved it. Ed Miliband, who's the former leader of the Labour Party, said if anything could have made him a Christian, it would have been that. A lot of clergy adored it. He gave a really good, rousing call for conversion to Christianity. One of the most telling criticisms was that it was very impersonal. It didn't actually say anything at all about the couple who were getting married. To my mind, there was a missed opportunity to mention the one thing that was on certainly my mind, which was Diana and her absence and how much I think she would have loved Meghan and everything it says about women and about how the royal family is changing.
Is there any significance in this rather familiar touch that he did use, because he looked at both Harry and Meghan and said, my brother and my sister?
It was warm. Everyone appreciated the warmth and enthusiasm and as you say, the levelling. I mean, the whole service was a very important step for not just the royal family and the British establishment, but for the whole country, because it was absolutely about race and about putting blackness into Britain. And of course, having someone who is the ancestor of people who've been slaves, having that person right at the centre of the establishment and of a country that had slavery for so long is a very important symbolic marker of change. Mm.
And just finally, Linda, did I discern at the very end of the speech, Harry mouthing to Meghan, wow?
Oh, did you discern that?
I did.
There have been many attempts to discern how they felt about it. There were several pictures of them looking stony-faced, and then there were pictures of people giggling. We don't know how they reacted, and if they're a typical royal family, we will never know what they really thought about it.
Well, it's terrific, though, to have you to help us interpret it. Linda Woodhead is a professor at Lancaster University. Her most recent book is That Was the Church That Was, How the Church of England Lost the English People. Linda, thanks for being with us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Always a pleasure.